Wake up! It's the Sleep Unplugged Podcast, episode 95, Sleep and Breath. Every breath you take. Welcome everyone to the Sleep Unplugged Podcast. My name is Chris Winner. I'm a neurologist and sleep specialist and your host for this very special episode of the podcast. I'm going to get to more about that in a minute, why it's so special. Really excited that you're here. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. If you're a veteran of the Sleep Unplugged podcast, welcome back. Glad to have you with us in this big family we call the Sleep Unplugged podcast crew. It's been a big week. Our podcast went over 150,000 downloads. That's a big, big number. Thank you so much. Could not have done it without you. Really neat to hear that the podcast is reaching so many places and so many people. We're really appreciative of that. Additionally, my first book, The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It, is the number three sleep book on Amazon. It was high when it first came out, then it, you know, kind of fell down into the 20s and kind of smoldered along there. But suddenly, we're back up to number three in sleep disorders, number three in physical illness and disease, number nine audiobook on hygiene and healthy living. And we were one of the top 1,000 audiobooks, all comers, for a period of time. So that's really exciting. I don't think we'll ever dethrone Matt Walker and his book, but I will certainly take the bronze medal any day. Really appreciative of the support for my book and all the wonderful reviews people have written. It's great. Just to know it helps one person is really very special to me. So if you'd like to talk to me about the show, if there's an episode that we have done that you've been one of the 150,000 downloaders of and want to comment on it, correct it, criticize it, critique it, compliment it. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Chris Winter. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Chris Winter. We have a TikTok page. We have a YouTube page where we upload all the videos of our content. My books are The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep's Broken and How to Fix It, as well as The Rested Child, Why Your Tired, Wired, or Irritable Child May Have a Sleep Disorder and How to Help. We always start the show off with listener comments. This is from Kevin Hooker, and he writes, "Great episode. I was wondering, Dr. Winter, if you have done or would consider doing an episode on the effects of antipsychotics and the effects they have on sleep, quantity and quality. I have someone very close to me that takes them, and I notice a difference in their sleep, but I'm curious what the literature says. I'm also a therapist that specializes in sleep, so this would be helpful information for my practice as well. Thank you for all you do." Thank you, Kevin, for all you do. We know this world needs wonderful counselors and therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists. We all need somebody to talk to, and we really appreciate the work that you do. Yeah, antipsychotics are a very interesting class of drug by themselves, but they're also an interesting sort of intersection between antipsychotics and sleep in the sense that, yes, they absolutely have massive impacts on sleep based upon the way they interfere or they interact with certain neurotransmitters like dopamine. But also there's a sort of a trend towards using antipsychotics specifically for sleep. And I'll post on my Twitter and Instagram page a amazing drug ad from back in the, I believe it was the late 50s for the drug Nembutal, which is no longer used as a sleep aid, but it is used in lethal injections, I believe. And the ad says, "For simple insomnia," that's at the top of the ad, "to manic psychosis" is at the bottom of the ad. And it implies that, hey, as long as you have Nembutal in your drug cabinet, you're good to go no matter what. If your friend comes over and has a little difficulty sleeping, or if your friend comes over and thinks that they are possessed by the devil, either way, this medication is going to help you. So I think this would be a great topic for a future podcast. I've added it to the list because it's a big topic of debate when sleep doctors get together. Like, should we be using antipsychotics like Seroquel just to help people sleep? And it certainly happened. So Kevin, appreciate your work, appreciate your question, appreciate you listening to the show. Thank you so much. You are on the list, and we will do that at some point in the future. So I talked at the top of the hour, or top of the show, that this was a special podcast, and it's special because it was put together by our producer, Maeve Winter, who actually has put together previous episodes of the podcast. She was responsible for doing all the research and legwork on episode 68 on perinatal sleep. And I told her, hey, since you did all this work, you get to pick the song. And of course, she picks a Police song because she's a huge Police fan. In fact, episode 52 featured the only guest we've ever had on the show. And you can watch the YouTube video of episode 52. And the episode was about picking out a mattress. And so we went through the process of picking out the mattress that she and her partner, Frankie, sleep on in New York City. And she chose the song for that, which was The Bed's Too Big Without You, off of the Police's second album, Regatta Del Block. So when, yeah, of course, this is on Breathwork, and she chooses Every Breath You Take off of the Police's final studio album, it's her fifth album, Synchronicity. Massive album, massive single. In fact, this single, written by Sting, is responsible for somewhere between a quarter to a third of all of his publishing income. So he wrote the song and gets all the royalties for it, which is not small, because it's been estimated that this song is played more than any song on the radio ever. Now, that might have changed in the last few years, but at the time that this behemoth of a song came out, it was everywhere. It won the Grammy for Song of the Year, won the Grammy for Best Pop Duo Performance of the Year. It did not win for Record of the Year. It lost to Michael Jackson, beat it. And it's just it's an amazing song. And what's really interesting when we go back to the songwriting credits is that the Andy Summers, the Police guitarist, has said in interviews, and there's a great interview of him with Rick Beato on YouTube if you're interested, where he basically says, look, the song kind of came, it was not particularly finished, the music was terrible, it kind of went through reggae iterations. Sting and Stuart Copeland, the drummer, came to blows when they were recording the album, so they actually had to piece it together. And Andy Summers basically was the guy that kind of came up with the legendary riff, the guitar riff that really brought everything together. And Stuart Copeland says, look, Andy put a lot of effort into this song. He should have some songwriting credit for the song. And they're embroiled in this big legal battle. In as recently as 2023, Andy said, just hang in there, because the verdict's going to basically show everyone what I've been saying all along, which I think is really interesting that there's this kind of fight goes on. And the Police did not end things on the best of terms when they broke up after this, after the recording of this album. And I was always a huge Synchronicity fan, because the album cover had like 38 variations of all the different pictures of the bands in those red, yellow, and blue stripes. So they had this different iterations of like the album of it. The album cover art was so awesome. So we're going to add Every Breath You Take to the Spotify Sleep Unplugged playlist. And we want to thank Maeve again for doing the amazing research on this podcast episode. So let's get into it. Breath, you know, like sleep, breath is life. And I talk a lot about sleep in terms of, this is something the body really can't do without, like food or water or breathing. In fact, we've talked about sleep apnea as being the intersection in our brains of a brain that can breathe or a brain that can sleep, but it really can't do both at the same time, particularly effectively. And so what does our brain choose? It chooses breath. So it's probably not too much of a stretch to say that when you put these primary drives, these fundamentals on a table, you've got a plate with sleep on it, a cup with liquid in it, another plate with food, and another container of breath, your body probably chooses breath before it chooses the other three things. And obviously, lack of breath will kill us faster than lack of the other three very quickly. So it's astonishing how little attention we pay to this in terms of breathing. Now, there was a book by Nestor that came out several years ago called Breath, and it got a lot of attention in terms of, this guy was sort of a reporter and really did this sort of deep dive into breathing. I always thought he was an interesting candidate to do the seminal work, but it was a massively popular book and really got into sort of the importance of breathing. So before we really dive into this is really sort of coming at things from more of a yogic perspective. And yoga is something I am very novice at, but Maeve is working now, in addition to her graduate studies in clinical psychology at Columbia Teachers College, which we've talked about before. She is also working at the Integral Yoga Institute in Soho, New York. And a lot of this has come from her training to be an instructor there. And she, when we talk about the different things she's learning and how it relates to clinical psychology and sleep and all these things are so, were so disparate, 20 years ago, and they're all kind of converging right now. She's like, you wouldn't believe these instructors and how much they know about these things and how incredible it is in terms of, controlling these things, not only for yoga purposes, but also for our health. So really excited to kind of dive into it from that perspective. So before we get too deep into the weeds here and looking at the sleep-specific benefits of breath work, here's some context. So in yoga, the practice of breath work is sort of being informed by the practice of yoga. And there are other frameworks for breathing, lots of them, in fact. But from a yogic perspective, there are really two main functions of this proper breathing. The first is to bring more oxygen into the blood. And when you get more oxygen in the blood, you get more oxygen to the brain. Anybody who's hyperventilated knows that feeling. So that's the first thing. It would be more of that, what I would consider almost the Western medical perspective of we breathe to enrich our blood with oxygen via our lungs and let that oxygen be distributed to the tissues of our body, including our greedy little brain that wants a lot of it. And number two, the other reason that we focus on breathing is to control prana. That's P-R-A-N-A. So prana is the vital energy or the life force. Some people, some cultures, some practices refer to that as chi. So those are the two reasons why we're focusing on breath work. So that brings us to the term pranayama. So pranayama is the science of breath control. And it's one of three fundamental parts of the yoga practice. There's the physical pose, which it really seems like to a casual yoga observer, that becomes the focus of it. It's the downward dog, it is the sphinx, it is the peaceful warrior. So it's the pose, but really that's sort of the prelude to the rest of the yoga practice, which is the pranayama, the control of the breathing, and then finally the meditation. And when I talk to individuals and patients and players and clients about sleep, particularly about insomnia, we talk a lot about resting. I'm a big believer in resting, and that if you rest properly and you get really good at the practice and the art of resting, it can do a lot of what sleep does. Meaning that I like the idea of resting because it's something under our control versus sleep, which we've talked about before, harder to control. And when you look at individuals who are really good at meditation and you measure their brain activity, for all intents and purposes, it can look like an individual who's asleep. somebody who's very practiced at that control of meditation. And so for yoga, a lot of what that is controlling the body, controlling the breathing for an ultimate control of the mind, which is what I think a lot of us could benefit from. And again, this is the ideas related to sleep that were just not in my wheelhouse a couple decades ago. And I find, I was just up at a, when I go to sleep meetings and things like, there's more and more of this kind of content that's sort of getting into the academic aspects of sleep, because there's really a lot of potential therapeutic benefit when we start thinking about these things. So we're thinking about the pranayana, I'm sorry, pranayama. And that's consisting of a series of exercises that are aimed at controlling the breath and keeping the body and mind healthy. So I really like that when you're thinking about yoga, it's the pose. Within it, the breathing, which I have to say as a sort of a novice yogi, I'm just trying to get through the pose. Like breathing is the last thing on my mind. And the meditation for me at the end is really just a period of thankfulness that I made it through the poses without hurting myself. So it's interesting the different levels that you go through where now all of a sudden the poses are sort of opening you up to breathing and mindfulness that you didn't have without them. So when we think about breathing, most people tend to breathe pretty shallowly and they're not spending a lot of time thinking about, attending to, or giving sort of thought to the way they breathe. So we tend to breathe very shallowly. We breathe through the mouth and make very little use of our diaphragm, which is the muscle that sits underneath our lungs that as it moves is acting as the bellows to create breath. Now, we also have accessory muscles that we often use in our between our ribs and up in our neck that we can use as well too, but diaphragmatic breathing. And I've always watched singers and, I've watched, singing lessons or watching, really accomplished singers talk about you're not breathing properly. You have to breathe through your diaphragm. Or when you go to the certain yoga classes, people are asking you to breathe in a certain way, trying to breathe through your diaphragm. Childbirthing classes, you often talk about that a lot as well too. So when we don't utilize our diaphragm and our breathing in the way we should, we're actually only bringing in a small amount of air and oxygen into the lungs. So we're not getting the transmission of oxygen into our tissues as fully or as efficiently as we should be able to. In fact, we're really only using the top portions of our lungs for that gas exchange. So in the practice of yoga, and specifically when we're talking about pranayama, we're trying to reverse those habits. We're trying to not breathe shallow. We're trying to breathe deeply. We're trying to utilize the entire surface area of the lungs and alveoli to create that very efficient and very robust gas exchange. And according to pranayama, breathing correctly means breathing through the nose, keeping the mouth closed, and involves a full inhalation and exhalation, which brings the whole of your lungs into play. And I think this is where the whole mouth taping thing kind of came into play, that if we are taping our mouth at night, that by default, we are utilizing our nose at least for the inhalation. But when you look at the pranayama, it's really about the inhalation through the nose. And for a lot of yogic practices, you're actually exhaling through the mouth. So we've talked about mouth taping and some of the positives and negatives that kind of go along with that. In this, we're going to really specifically think about specific breath work and breathing exercises. So I think it would be fun that if you're listening to perhaps follow along, if you're in a safe place, I don't know how yogic breathing could put you in jeopardy. So if you're driving, maybe we'll wait to do this exercise when you're not driving. But if you're on a subway somewhere going to work and listening to this, or you're walking to class on a lovely day in Annapolis or Burlington, Vermont, or wherever your college campus may be, let's do a little breathing exercise. So, on inhalation, I want you to first send your air to the bottom of your lungs, the base of your abdomen. I want you to basically fill that part of your lungs first. So imagine filling the base of your lung right underneath your ribs. And as you fill that up, you're going to fill the abdomen, move your way up to the base of the rib cage, all the way up to the tops of your lungs in your chest. And so as you do that complete inhalation, on the exhalation, first you're going to relax your chest and let the air out naturally. You might feel your collarbones descend as that natural air escapes. Then as you relax your web, your then as you relax your rib cage, the final part is I want you to pull your belly and navel inwards to complete the exhalation as you're pushing out the remaining air, almost as if it was in your abdomen. So you're pulling your navel in, pulling your abdomen in to rid yourself of all the air in your chest. And it should be an easy movement. There should be no strain involved. So as you think about this deep breathing, it's really a three-part diaphragmatic breathing exercise. And this is one of the foundational breath patterns of pranayama, also known as the Dirgha Swasam. So that's Dirgha Swasam. It translates into the three-part breath. And it's been said that when you breathe this way, you could be breathing up to seven times more oxygen into your body than a normal breath. And whenever I've done yoga practices with really experienced teachers, they really focus on these complete breaths, the full breath, the full complement of oxygen being brought into your body. So I want you to try this breathing sometime. So if you're in a place where you can dedicate 3 to 5 minutes to this kind of breathing, you know, we were talking about the Muse device where we would set it to a 3-minute meditation and you're trying to again control your brain activity. If you've got some sort of device like that, or if you've tried out the Muse, that was from our Weird Insomnia Tips episode. I want you to do it the way you would normally do it. And then I want you to pull that meditative device out and try some of this kind of three-part breathing, this deeper breathing. And I want you to see how it influences the meditative nature and the brain activity that you see, because we're really talking about how does breathing affect sleep? And that has everything to do with the way breathing interacts with the nervous system, particularly the parasympathetic nervous system, the part of our nervous system that is calming ourselves, the rest and digest part, with versus sympathetic nervous system's fight or flight, right? So I want you to think about that kind of breathing, the pranayama, and if you're doing that deeper breathing, do you feel it affecting the way your nervous system's firing? If you're somebody who deals with the anxiety, can you take a minute or two break, find a quiet place where you work and do some breathing exercises? Does it influence the way your nervous system feels? And there's reasons to think that it might when you actually look at these types of breathing exercises. So the main benefit of pranayama on sleep specifically is it's a powerful aid in engaging that parasympathetic nervous system. And in pranayama, there are three parts to each breath. There is the inhalation, the retention, so the hold, and then the exhalation. And people often think of the inhalation as the most important stage, but it's actually the exhalation that's actually the key in terms of that parasympathetic engagement. That process of exhaling engages the parasympathetic nervous system and is very supportive for sleep. So when we think about insomnia, when we think about sleep, we've got vigilance on one side, wakefulness, and then we've got sleep on the other. So when we're awake and moving through our day, we want that engagement, that activation, that vigilance, that wakefulness to be high, and our drive to sleep, that relaxation to be low. We want to be engaged. We want to be doing our jobs effectively and in a way that fulfills us. So as we transition from day to evening, it's now time to start relaxing. And how many people are visiting sleep clinics all over the place saying, I can't shut my mind off. I can't control my racing thoughts. I can't relax. I can't seem to find or engage in sleep. So this is a very clinically relevant topic because we're trying to create a way where individuals can relax and move towards that parasympathetic state without the need of feeling like, well, I've got to take something, I've got to do something to settle myself down. I've got to drink alcohol, I've got to take these pills because without it, I can't engage that parasympathetic activity on my own. I've never really been taught how to do that. And what's interesting is one theory about the way that parasympathetic nervous system is engaged has to do with the diaphragm. And as we take these deeper breaths, the movement of that diaphragm serves as a stimulus for the parasympathetic nervous system via the vagus nerve. So the vagus nerve is one of 12 cranial nerves, and it's actually the only cranial nerve that extends down the body and goes through an opening into the diaphragm. And that deep inhalation, slow, complete exhalation kind of massages or stimulates the vagus nerve, which in turn can stimulate that parasympathetic response. So pranayama can support good sleep by being a useful aid, not only in terms of meditation, but getting your body in more of a meditative state. So your state of mind is sort of reflected in the way you breathe. In fact, I was just out in San Antonio. Well, I was actually about 3 hours away from San Antonio at McLaughlin Air Force Base doing some talks with the Air Force about sleep. And it was really interesting because I was talking to my buddy. I won't mention his name since he's from the military, but he knows who he is. And as we were talking, he said, yeah, when I'm an instructor, I instruct young pilots like your son, who will be a pilot in the Navy. These are Air Force pilots. They operate on the same sort of platform. It's the T-6 Texan. So it's a two-seater. So the instructor's sitting behind you, you're in front, and you're flying this plane, and the instructor's giving you things that you need to do. And he said, the really interesting thing about being an instructor is we've got the mask. So think about Tom Cruise, you got the mask there, you know, talk to me, goose, you know, kind of situation there. So the mask is there, but there's a microphone in there. So the instructor and the student can speak to one another. And he said, it's really interesting, Chris, because the one thing you can really hear when you're flying with someone is their breathing patterns. So as an instructor, I can tell based upon the speed with which they're breathing, the depth with which they're breathing, their mental state. Are they tense? Are they relaxed? Are they stressing? Are they, because it's all being revealed with the breathing pattern, which I think is fantastic. And one thing he will often say to people is, I need you to take some deep breaths now. I need you to slow your breathing down now, because that breathing is acting as a reflection of that individual state of mind. And I love the bi-directional nature of that. Yes, the state of mind is dictating the breathing. So the breathing is absolutely an indicator of that state of mind. But what yoga is teaching us and what we can learn in terms of our sleep is that when we control the breathing, it works backwards to start to affect the state of mind, which I think is absolutely fantastic and is going to be so helpful for a lot of people when it comes to their sleep. So, by regulating your intake of oxygen and bringing awareness to your breathing, you're also preparing yourself for the practice of concentration and meditation. Or if you're a young pilot, bringing awareness to your breathing is preparing you for that concentration necessary to execute that maneuver in an airplane. So whatever we're doing, the breathing, the focus on the breathing is going to make us better at that. Getting ready to take some finals. You know, here we are, we're in April right now, right? Getting ready to, you know, move into May, where a lot of college students getting ready to take some pretty heavy duty finals, standardized testing. It's all over the place now, you know, and focusing on that breathing is going to make you better at that stressful task at hand. And if sleep is your stressful task at hand, it's going to make you better at that as well too. And here's a great quotation that Maeve sent me related to breathing that I'm going to read to you. When the breath wanders, the mind is unsteady. But when the breath is still, so is the mind. And that's from an ancient yogic text, Hatha Yoga Pradipika. And forgive me if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, but what a wonderful sort of mantra to think about. And so there's not a lot of research that's been done specifically looking at pranayama's effect on sleep, but it is available. I mean, there was a study from 2023, just last year, the effects of pranayama on deep breathing exercises on fatigue and sleep quality in women receiving radiation therapy for breast cancer. This was a randomized controlled study. And in that study, it actually showed that these individuals who were breathing had less fatigue at the end of radiation therapy, and that the group that was practicing these breathing techniques had better sleep quality. Fantastic. You know, I really like this kind of, and that was a very small group. It was I think it was a number. I think there were 60 patients in it and 20 were practicing the breathing. So relatively small group, but great pilot study. A similar effective yogic breathing pranayama on exercise tolerance in patients with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. If you have COPD, it's a massive problem in terms of people's sleep. In fact, you can read a sleep study with somebody with COPD and you can recognize it pretty quickly. So anything that could, you know, potentially improve COPD might be able to improve sleep. The effect of pranayama intervention on stress, anxiety, depression, and sleep quality among COVID-19 patients in home isolation. That was a 2022 study that once again showed that these individuals who were practicing the breathing did seem to do better on measures of sleep quality and their depression scales, the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index, and DASS, Depression, Anxiety, and Stress Scale 21. And these patients had significant improvement in terms of their quality of sleep. So there's several others if you look it up. And it's really great that pranayama is a keyword that you can search within a medical database now. It's that mainstream, which I think is fantastic. So other studies have shown lowering stress, reducing anxiety symptoms, and again, improving sleep quality. So some takeaway points here. Pranayama is a practice you may not have heard much about. This may be a term that's new to you, certainly was new to me. And while it's not as popular as the asana portion or the posing portion of yoga, it's still extremely important. And this subtle practice shouldn't be overlooked. So I'm somebody relatively new to yoga who really does it because I want my body to remain flexible as I get older and I don't want to hurt myself lifting weights. I really have been thinking about, you know, more thought being put into the breathing and less about getting the pose exactly right. So everything your teachers are saying to you, hey, do what you can do, really focus on your breathing. I'm more of a type A, you know, medical student person. I've got to get the pose right. And if they say, well, here's an optional thing that you could do, well, of course, I've got to do the optional thing because I don't want to be the loser that doesn't do the optional thing. And that's really a terrible way to sort of think about and approach yoga. So I think that focusing on breathing can be a great way to start to take your practice to the next level. It's relatively easy to learn these techniques and really doesn't require any equipment. And as long as you're listening to your body and you're not straining or holding your breath, it really doesn't carry with it much, if any, risk of sort of any kind of injury. So it's a very accessible technique for a lot of people and very adaptive. And it's a great thing to focus on if you're sick or under the weather. I'm often talking to baseball players that have, you know, getting ready to do Tommy John surgery, and they can't do all the things that they want to do because of this injury. And I thought Maeve had a really good point. She said, you know, for your players that you talk to, yeah, you can talk to them about their sleep, but a lot of times, you know, when they're recovering from pretty big surgeries, they want to do things. They're very frustrated that all the other players are in the weight room and doing all this stuff, and they show up and do a little bit of something here and there and some get some work on their elbow, but they can't do much. They just leave and go home. So I really like the idea that it's something that they can focus on and do for their body. You know, especially if you've been trying to meditate and find it difficult to focus, the breath work really makes a big difference there. And in fact, when you do meditations, it really goes to the next level when you start focusing on your breath work. So adding this as another tool to your toolkit in terms of, you know, what to do when you're struggling with your sleep or going through those difficult times, I think focusing on breath and learning more about it can be a great way to do it. And if you want better information than what I'm giving you as the complete novice, there is a fantastic book called The Breath of Life, Integral Yoga Pranayama, Step-by-Step Instructions in the Yogic Breathing Practices. I have no financial relationship with that book. And I will note that unlike my book that is number 3 in sleep books, only has a 4.4 rating on Amazon, The Breath of Life, Integral Yoga Pranayama, Step-by-Step Instructions in the Yogic Breathing Practices actually carries with it a 4.6 rating. So I think that will be $10 well spent. So that's it. Yogic breathing. I want to give a huge thanks to Maeve. Another huge thanks to the Integral Yoga Institute in Soho, New York City. They've been around there forever. They're amazing. So next time you're in New York, stop in there for a class. You might see Maeve. You might see me. I've gone to several classes there. You might be instructed by Maeve as a young instructor. They're fantastic people. Really appreciate all the information about breathing that you're passing on to Maeve and that she's passing on to you, the listeners of the Sleep Unplugged podcast. So tell me about your dealings with breath work. What do you find helpful? Where have you seen it play a part in your life? I'd really love to know more about it as we share these stories with one another. I will give you the results of the grounding mat experiment in my social media. I'm 6 days in. I've had 2 not so great nights. The rest have been good nights. We'll do another night tonight, maybe tomorrow. And then once we have 7 days worth, we'll reveal how did my days line up with whether the grounding mat was plugged in or not plugged in. So that's it. Breath work done and dusted. Every breath you take going on the mix. DM me at Dr. Chris Winter on Twitter. DM me Dr. Chris Winter Instagram. You can follow my accounts in both of those places. Please like, subscribe, and review the podcast if it's been helpful to you. And until next week, sleep well and breathe well.